Reach Up the Science podcast with your girl, Anne, with an E.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Root of the Science podcast with your girl, Anne, with an E. If you are new here, thank you so much for tuning in. It's so lovely to have you, and I hope you'll stay by clicking on subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you listen to your podcast. To the people who keep on coming back to listen, oh, wow, what would I do without you guys? Thank you so much, as usual, for listening to this show. It's really, really great to have your support. Now, let's get into today's episode. My guest today is Faith February, a South African based in Cape Town. In this episode, we learn that her father helped her develop a passion and talent for mathematics at a young age. She went on to pursue a degree in mathematics and computer science as her majors in university. She realized that computer science was not what she wanted to study and changed her majors to mathematics and physics. Faith explains that while finishing her master's degree, she applied for a job at the Institute of Maritime Technology, which works with the South African Navy. And she worked there for 16 years in various roles, including cadet, scientist, senior scientist, and chief scientist. Faith describes how working in a male-dominated industry presented unique challenges, particularly as a sole female employee, and how she stood up for herself and took charge of her career. Her efforts were rewarded when she was chosen to participate in an international project collaboration. After working on the project for 10 months and collecting large amounts of data, she decided that more work was needed. And after 16 years, she decided to pursue her PhD. Currently, she is a PhD student in oceanography at the University of Cape Town, South Africa. Her study looks at the effects of atmospheric aerosols on climate change. She describes the study and its significance to us. Finally, Faith discusses the changes that occurred when she transitioned from working to being a full-time student, as well as a work-life balance as she holds various roles. Hi, Faith. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Anne. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. Thank you so much for joining. It's such a pleasure to have you on and to chat with you. Can you just give us a brief introduction? Who's Faith? Where are you from? Where are you based? And just shortly, what are you currently
doing? So I'm a South African, born and raised in Cape Town, in the northern suburbs of the Western Cape. I am currently doing my PhD in oceanography at the University of Cape Town. My research focuses on atmospheric aerosols that were measured in False Bay, South Africa.
Fantastic. So before we get into your science, right, it's always quite interesting to find out who you are away from the science. So I know that you love to garden and all of that stuff. So I just wanted to ask you, is that how you calm yourself away from the busyness that is being a scientist?
Yes, you're quite great. And especially when I have very intense online meetings, then after point of it to go out into the garden, and even if I don't fiddle in the ground, just walking around and between the plants and looking at God's wonderful creations, it really helps to calm me down and to maybe the thoughts that I have to just let it settle down and to rethink the meetings and the information and everything. It's such a calm environment where I can really gather myself again.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree. And with the way our Zoom life is, just staring at a computer is actually quite draining. So going out and seeing the sun and seeing the garden is, I can imagine how, what a wonderful effect that must have on your overall well-being, which is really great. And I'm glad that you have something that you do to bring you back away from the computer screen.
Yeah, no, I'm also grateful for that.
Yeah, so before you were
PhD candidates in oceanography, it's important for us to understand how you got there. So how do you become interested in science? What was the root of the science? Were there influences in your life? Could you just elaborate?
Yes, there were influences. At a very young age, I had a love for maths, and it was fueled by my dad drilling me to know tables. So after school, I had to sit with the tables. And when he got home from work, he would ask me the tables. And what was so great about that drilling that I got at home, it helped me to excel in school. So when I got to grade 7, that time it was standard 5, my math teacher would do the same in class to ask us randomly the multiplication tables. And I was like on it because of the exercise I got back home. And then I also had to help my fellow classmates who were there struggling with maths. And that made me to want to become a maths teacher too. So in high school, my life orientation teacher helped me to acquire a teacher's bursary, as my parents didn't have the means to send me. So, and then another influence in my life was at university. I started out with maths and computer science as my majors, but I soon realized that the computer science was not what I had in mind. I then became intrigued with physics and changed to maths and physics as my majors. And my professor, Hans Ehers, he saw my potential in physics and also helped me to apply for bursaries. And I then went on to do my honors and eventually master's in physics. So yeah, that's about that. I ended up with a master's degree in physics.
You mentioned that you realized that computer science was not what you really wanted to be in. So you specialized in physics and mathematics. And after your master's, you qualified as a chief scientist. So briefly, for somebody who doesn't know, what does the term chief scientist actually mean?
Before we go there, let me also explain that I didn't just finish my master's and was then a chief scientist. That was also quite a journey. So while I was finishing off on my master's, I got a letter from a recruiting company asking me to apply for a job at the Institute for Maritime Technology. It was the first time that I then heard about this company. And because my master's was in physics and the institute, they actually did technological research for the South African Navy, I had to learn, and so I was appointed as a cadet where I had to learn the ropes of the maritime environment as well as the environment, of which I had knowledge even with an MSc. And then after the 3 years of contracting, they then gave me a permanent employment as a scientist. And because of my qualification, I was then soon promoted to senior scientist, but without any remuneration extra or anything. It was just a title change. And as a scientist or senior scientist, I was involved in several projects that the company ran. So they focus on a very wide range of technological research that they assist the Navy with, from below the water to the ships to the atmosphere and even the decision support elements. And I was quite open to be involved in whatever projects that came my way. So I was then project leader of infrared thermography, which was also a new field to me, but it was based on the physics principles that the infrared cameras work on. So That helped me to establish the infrared capability in the Navy from scratch. I was project leader for about 9 years, I think. And in the meantime, so I enjoyed my work as a scientist. In the meantime, I had to undergo lots of parity studies and write several letters and fold in several forms for me to be actually promoted. And in the end, when I was promoted to chief scientist, it was a anticlimax, almost like a bittersweet moment, because I felt that I wasn't compensated for the lost years. So, that was my experience. And what also happened as a chief scientist, the Navy also worked on contract basis. So they were contracting the Institute for Maritime Technology to do projects on. And in that time, before I was promoted to chief scientist, they actually charged more for my hours and my input because they could see the work that I was delivering on these projects. But yet I didn't get the benefit of that. So, yeah, that was the situation then.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I can completely understand why you felt the way that you felt. So compared to a senior scientist and a chief scientist, so the responsibilities were more. You said that the time lost or the remuneration was, had it changed?
From senior scientist to chief scientist, there was a jump in remuneration. But like I said, the responsibilities, I actually increased whilst I was a senior scientist. So when I became chief scientist, it was more or less the same. But what happened in my own life was that after my third child, I realized that I was capable of so much more and that I was actually being underutilized in the company. So I went to promote myself and sit in on meetings, and I purposefully chased the projects and dreams and goals that I wanted to be involved in. I no longer sat and waited for handouts and hand-me-downs, as you would call it. But so I got involved in projects that I was really interested in and wanted to expand my career on.
Wow, I love that. So was that easy for you to do? Did the environment allow you to, or did you get some pushback in terms of you now saying, hey, actually, I want to be in these spaces? Or was it a little bit tougher to navigate?
It was a bit of both. Some people actually admired me for moving into and wanting to move into spaces. Others felt that I might be a challenge to them, because remember, the field, the physics field, and even at the institute, it was always very male dominated. So I was always only woman in the group, and the men didn't always like the woman being so vocal and being so present and all over. So yes, there were some pushbacks, but then you also got some nice guys who actually supported you and admired you for taking the stand and wanting to go further. And I just focused on the positive. And like I said, because the motivation came from myself and from within, that I made that conscious to change my situation. I think from then, there was no stopping me really, because I then also became a member of the South African National Council for Natural Scientific Professions, SACNAS. And that really gave me the edge, because at that time I was then the only person with that qualification in the company. So people had to step aside, even if they didn't want to at times, to make way for me. That was a good feeling. And what was very special to me, that other people actually came from outside and also saw my potential. I was involved in an international experiment, the first European South African transmission experiment, FESTA for short. And during that experiment, the Dutch brought their aerosol equipment to South Africa. And they didn't have the funds to have somebody delivered with the equipment and to stay in South Africa for the 10-month period that the experiment ran. So they asked me to be in charge of the equipment, to do the maintenance, and they trained me to do the data acquisition and everything. So that to me was a huge honor, that strangers actually came and saw the potential and trusted me enough to take care of their very expensive equipment.
Wow, I'm just like, yes. I'm just like, yes, yes. I love the story. And how you said that you made that conscious decision, and I think everything changed from there. And how you sought out to kind of differentiate yourself and to kind of make yourself more valuable by getting that qualification. I love the whole entire story. It's like, it just screams girl power. And I love girl power stories. But I think also at the same time, it's also very important for us to mention, like you said, that it wasn't, you also had the support of other males who were supportive. So that's really, really great. So this is so interesting, you talking us through your journey in industry, right? And you were in industry for 16 years, and you messed up like so many years of experience and expertise. Then you kind of switched and you decided to come back to study full time, if I'm not mistaken. So what happened? What was the reason?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I was involved in this international experiment where I was in charge of the aerosol equipment. And for about 10 months. So we acquired enormous amounts of data. And then one day I just asked the Dutch guy, but listen, can't I do a PhD on this? Because I was also involved in the preliminary data analysis. And the focus of the experiment was more physics related, in that we were looking at the atmospheric effects in the bay, so in False Bay. And that I could relate to, but I saw that there was more to the data that we've acquired than just looking at the atmospheric effects. And for those of you who don't know, aerosols are microscopic particles that are suspended in the air or in liquid. And you cannot see it with the naked eye, but it has a huge impact, because those microscopic particles actually scatter and absorb the incoming radiation from the sun as well as the exiting radiation that bounces back from the earth and all types of surface. So what these particles do is that if you in the morning, so if there are lots of aerosols in the air, then you will see that haziness, and sometimes with lots of pollution, you'll see like a smoke, a brown layer in the atmosphere. Those are the aerosols. And you get different types of aerosols that have different shapes and sizes and have different effects on the atmosphere. And also aerosols, because it scatters and absorbs the sun's radiation, it has an impact on climate. And the International Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, they attribute the lack of the confidence in climate change prediction models to the uncertainties that they have around these aerosols. Aerosols can be easily measured on land, but to do aerosol measures over the sea and in the remote regions, that is quite difficult. And as we know that the oceans actually form almost 70% of the Earth's surface. So the sea spray aerosols that occur naturally above the oceans, they have a huge impact compared to aerosols that we find on land. So that area is still very understudied. And what we now have with the experimental setup that we had is the opportunity of measuring sea spray aerosols in False Bay. And because of False Bay being open towards the Southern Ocean, pristine air masses from Antarctica can flow over the Southern Ocean and into False Bay. And our data actually proved this to be true, and that we were able to measure pure marine sea spray aerosols in False Bay. And I was fortunate 2 years ago to go to France, because I've got a supervisor there as well. And their site in Porquerolles in the Mediterranean Sea, they also have aerosol measurements that they do. But even with their pure marine conditions where the wind blows from the sea, there's still some continental influence in the aerosol measurements. So we compared our results to theirs, and we found that we are really very fortunate in measuring the aerosols. And what is more, Anne, is that these aerosol, sea spray aerosols specifically that we measure from the deep south, they can be used as a proxy for pre-industrial conditions. So that is a huge plus, because we know that the Earth is very influenced by man-made conditions and effects. So there's really places where we can see what things were like before we came on the scene and influenced everything.
Yeah, wow. Oh my goodness, your research sounds so fascinating. So, so fascinating and so important, especially I think for most people, we didn't know that these aerosols have this environmental impact on oceans or just generally. So I am astounded by the amazing work that you're doing, and I wish you all of the best in your research. And the further work, which I'm sure you'll publish from all of your findings. So it sounds like you see it sounds like there was a nice link from you working with the Dutch company and transitioning into your PhD in terms of academically, because you had that experience, right?
Yes. Yes.
So I want to know now, how was that transition? Not academically, because I think it sounds like it was in the same aspect. So how was that transition for you now from working in industry to now going to work as a PhD researcher? How did that go, and how did you manage after so long being a student?
Yeah, it was very difficult because I gave up my job with a lucrative, and I had to live off my provident fund with a 50% pay cut. While I was working, I had an office overlooking the sea, Simonstown, and moved to sharing an office space with four other people. So, and also when I was a chief scientist, like I said, my career was taking off and people started to notice me. I was even in 2016, I was featured as a scientist at the Top Women Awards in Dallas. So, and then I was now a full-time student again. And even I was placed in a research group where the word biogeochemistry sounded too much to handle. Because even though there was this instances or little bit of overlap in the research fields, I still didn't know much about oceanography itself. So I really started at the bottom, even with the research. And but what I found was that there were three main things that helped me to survive. The first was that I saw my new role as a full-time student as a new job. So I told the kids and my husband that I was going to do a new job now, changing to a new job. And although the income was meager compared to my previous job, I managed to obtain bursaries, and the mindset of having a new job also helped me and my family to realize the importance of me giving my best and making a success of my studies. Yeah, to now do the dishes and clean the house all of the time. I had my studies to focus on. And then I was also at the department, I was thrown into the deep end with a presentation that I had to do for the department 1 month into starting my full-time studies. So that really made me realize, but there's no sitting in the corner and having a pity party all by myself. I have to jump out and actually put my whole weight behind studies and what I was doing, because I had to share with the rest of the department. And then the bi-weekly research group meetings also played a very supportive role in helping me to keep my focus on the studying that I was doing. And thirdly, I have a wonderful supportive husband and a great support system. So our kids were small when I started as a full-time student, and I gave myself a 3-year window in which to complete my studies. The finances that I had also were estimated to last about 3 to 3.5 years. So with that in mind, I had to keep my focus on doing this new endeavor that I set out to do.
Wow. I'm glad that you had sort of like an action plan before going ahead and, you know, taking on this new role. But yeah, I'm sure somebody might have been like, why leave and start? Because like you said, you've made a lot of sacrifices to pursue this degree. But
yeah, I wanted to say that I started with a PhD whilst being employed, and the company also offered me time off to focus on my PhD. But at the end of, or towards the end of 2017, I realized that I didn't progress as much as I wanted to. And I didn't want to do a PhD for 10 to 12 years as many of other people that I know of did, because of doing it part-time. So I wanted to focus and get it over and done with.
No, I completely understand. And yeah, it's a personal decision and it's a personal journey. So as we almost sort of wrap up, you mentioned that you're a mom, you're a wife, you're a PhD student, and also you are a mentor, actually, and also a teacher at Sunday school. So it sounds like you have a very busy schedule. So how do you manage to balance all of this and sort of kind of keep sane as you navigate your journey, having these various roles?
Yeah, many times I also sit back and I think, wow, how do you do this? But then I come to the realization that it's only by the grace of God. I am tremendously fortunate to have the life that I have and all these lots of things to keep me interested and occupied all the time, and I love what I do. So with the COVID pandemic and the hard lockdown, we were all thrown together into one space, our house. Huge challenge initially, but we soon adapted and realized the value of accommodating each other. The kids respect my time and space when I have online meetings. And like we mentioned in the beginning, after a meeting, I will go out into the garden, or I will make the kids a treat like waffles and honey or a toast sandwich, whatever they would like. And sometimes they then help me to prepare Sunday school lessons, especially if there's arts and crafts involved. They love. And then my husband is also working from home, and he works as a financial officer in the physics department at Stellenbosch University, where I studied my physics. So I know most of the people there, and we chat a lot and share our experiences and encounters with each other, because we sort of understand each other's worlds. And we also love to cook together, and that helps to find and find that balance. But I must say, we can't do dishes together, because he complains about me and I complain about him using cold water to rinse the dishes, and then it's difficult to dry them. So yeah.
Yeah, well, at least you know that the cooking aspect is good. So what do you do with the dishes? Is it somebody else's responsibility, sole responsibility?
Yeah, so if he decides to do the dishes, then I step out of the kitchen and vice versa.
No, that's a nice balance. I love that. Oh, and I love how you've managed to to find this balance in your life. And it's been pretty inspiring just listening to your story and how it all started and you working and coming back to school and still being phenomenal and inspiring as you are. So with somebody who's listening, and I'm sure they are inspired, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I would say that make sure about the field of study you want to venture in. You can contact me on faithjfabs@yahoo.com if you have any questions. But there are so many options available today. And people just need to be flexible and open for changes and opportunities that may come their way. A career in STEM is not easy. No matter what your gender or background or whatever, it requires continuous hard work. And but I still think that it is very rewarding, especially if you focus on making a contribution to advance your STEM field, the specific field that you are interested in. And then I would also like to encourage people that do not rely on affirmations of others. Do and be your best. Also, don't be afraid to be the odd one out. I was the odd one out all the years, but it makes sure that there's diversity. So be the odd one out because diversity needs you. Thank you.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it's hard being the odd one out, but like you say, diversity definitely needs you to be different and to set yourself apart from the rest. You know, thank you. Thank you so much for coming and chatting with me today. I had such a great time listening to you share your whole entire journey. So it was really, really quite an honor to host you.
Thank you very much. It was a real privilege to be on your show, and thanks for the honor.
Yeah, and to everybody else who's listening, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of The Rich of the Sounds podcast with your girl Anne with an E. Till next time, goodbye.